We've now rebranded ourselves to Mission MSA for a couple reasons. One, this name allows for more external understanding, those that aren't within our community, of what is our organization. And it's actually in our tagline, leading the charge to cure MSA, multiple system atrophy. And it also is very clear that there's a sense of urgency to what we hope to accomplish. There's urgency to address the now, provide support and education for our patients, care partners, and their families, as well as continue to push hard for research that better accelerates, again, the understanding and eventually a cure for multiple system atrophy.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Joe Lindahl, CEO of Mission MSA. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joanne. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, tell us about Mission MSA.
Yeah, Mission MSA. We are the largest patient advocacy and research organization dedicated towards multiple system atrophy. Multiple system atrophy, or MSA, is a rare neurodegenerative disease. The easiest way I describe it is it's Parkinson's cousin, but it's much faster. So Parkinson's on speed. And unfortunately, often misdiagnosed with Parkinson's until we get a new probable diagnosis of MSA.
Joe, what does it mean that it's multiple system atrophy?
It's a great question. And it really means that it affects multiple pieces of the brain. So we have a couple different types of MSA, MSA-C, which is cerebellar, so it affects cerebellar ataxia, and then MSA-P, or MSA Parkinson's, where a patient really has more Parkinsonian symptoms initially in the clinic.
Ah, so there's different flavors, and it's attacking different systems. How many people are affected by MSA each year? How many people get diagnosed?
Well, back to the original piece of it's hard to diagnose. Many of our patients, again, are initially diagnosed with Parkinson's. Then as they progress through their journey, they will start to experience slightly different symptoms that are perhaps a little bit different. And then the drugs that normally treat Parkinson's are no longer working. From there, they'll start to go through the next iteration of tests and assessments to determine, do I actually have Parkinson's or do I have another pseudonucleinopathy or atypical Parkinson's, which is MSA. We estimate between 15 to 50,000 people in the United States are living with multiple system atrophy, and that is our best estimate at this point.
Huh. Joe, let me ask you a question. So when I booked you to be on this podcast, your organization had a different name. You were the Multiple System Atrophy Coalition, and you recently rebranded to Mission MSA. So tell us about the rebrand.
Yeah. So we're over a 30-year-old organization, and we've evolved with the disease. It actually used to be known as the Scheidt-Dräger syndrome. So we were then the Scheidt-Dräger support group. We then became the Multiple System Atrophy Coalition to kind of be more recognized as the organization for MSA. And we've now rebranded ourselves to Mission MSA for a couple reasons. One, this name allows for more external understanding, those that aren't within our community, of what is our organization. And it's actually in our tagline, leading the charge to cure MSA, multiple system atrophy. And it also is very clear that there's a sense of urgency to what we hope to accomplish. There's urgency to address the now, provide support and education for our patients, care partners, and their families, as well as continue to push hard for research that better accelerates, again, the understanding and eventually a cure for multiple system atrophy. The coalition piece of it was a bit confusing. We heard externally, like, were we a coalition of companies, organization, industry? But really, we are one. We have multiple constituents that help support and really provide a lot of horsepower to what we do as an organization.
Well, we're going to talk about Mission MSA in a second. But before we do that, let's talk about your journey. So how'd you get to be CEO of Mission MSA?
So I think, like many, many, many tales all the time for association professionals, of fell into it. I graduated from DePaul University with a degree in journalism in 2008. So for those listeners that aren't of a certain age, 2008 was about the time of the big recession.
Right.
It was also the same time that people decided they didn't want to read newspapers anymore. And again, a newspaper, for those who are listening, are the things that your parents get.
Right, right.
So that's what I want to do. I want to be a newspaper writer. I want to do sports. And you know, the entire landscape changed. So by the time I was leaving school, I was just trying to find a job at that point. So I graduated. I worked actually at a gym taking care of kids for a bit, because I've always liked kids. And then I found a temp to hire job with a staffing firm that put me as an account administrator at an AMC.
An association management company.
Association management company, that's right, in Chicago. No idea what it was. I went through the interview, ended up I was going to do some marketing. So I worked for two groups, the National Association of Healthcare Quality and the American Association of Neuroscience Nurses. And they both had certification boards and they both had foundations. So I actually had six clients, but I was helping support doing the marketing work for. And I kind of loved it, like learning about these specialty groups that were accelerating their causes, the education, better patient outcomes. I liked the marketing aspect. And I kind of just grew from there. I stayed there for about 3 years, got promoted to and doing more operation, governance, committee work. And then I decided this is a perfect time for me to spread my wings a bit. I'm mid-20s. So we decided to try Washington, D.C. We moved to D.C., got an apartment sight unseen.
And who's we at this point?
Me and my girlfriend at the time, now my wife. She stuck through it. Got an apartment in Silver Spring, Maryland, sight unseen. And I think had we seen it, we wouldn't have gotten it. The bathroom, I'll never forget it, was like Pink Panther pink.
Oh, I had one of those.
The entire floor to ceiling, the toilet.
Yes.
It was incredible.
Little pink tiles, right? I had one of those in Washington, D.C. Yep.
Right. Amazing. So we went there. I worked for the Child Life Council. Now I believe the Association of Child Life Professionals, doing their strategic initiative program, learning about a completely new profession. Child life specialists really do incredible work in pediatric centers, helping with trauma and stress and calming. You'll find them in NICUs and a lot of pediatric hospitals. And it's a really interesting and key service. And one of their main modalities is play. Like they actually use the therapy of play to support patients and their families, which is fascinating. I then moved over to the trade side and became the chapter manager for the American Staffing Association in Alexandria. And I did that for about 3 years. And I really like component relations as well. I got to work with local leaders and try and find ways that we can better align ourselves from a national standpoint, as well as a state and grassroots level in the relationships and learning, again, a completely industry I hadn't really known much about, except when I was actually initially placed in my first job through a staffing firm. It's kind of a full circle moment. It was a great experience. I got promoted once and had the opportunity and bandwidth and luckily the leadership buy-in to kind of revamp some of how they've organized their chapters and eventually what we called regional councils, again, for better alignment purposes. And then I went back actually to the first AMC back in Chicago, moved back to become a senior operations manager for the National Association of Neonatal Nurses. So back to the nursing space, which I do enjoy immensely. Learned a lot about the NICU, got to work in their nominations, really support the executive director, was chief of staff for their kind of a side piece of the organization, specifically for nurse practitioners, which is a fascinating exercise as well. Cut my teeth for the first time to be the staff lead for a board-like work, which is fantastic. And then I got promoted and became the executive director for the International Transplant Nurses Society and the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. Very interesting work. I actually just had my first child about that time. So the breastfeeding thing was fascinating. Mostly physicians, well, actually all physicians, and really working to expand the knowledge, education, the benefits around breastfeeding as a real field of interest and expertise. And then Transplant Nurses Society was an amazing group to work with as well. Solid organ donations, working with those folks that will kind of work outpatient, inpatient care, and all the challenges around organ donation. And then from there, I came to where I am now, just CEO for the Mission MSA, which has been an interesting transition, but then incredibly rewarding. So that's how I got here in a nutshell.
Wow. So Joe, you worked for a number of professional societies, especially in the medical field, but now you're with a patient advocacy organization. What's that like? How's it different from going from a membership group to more of a nonprofit?
It's definitely different, but it's not as different perhaps as you might think. I mean, the governance, how we organize boards, how we build that staff board, the volunteer dynamic, how we do assessment, like all of that actually is very same. The reason that I kind of wanted to make this change was because having been at professional societies, trade organizations, I love that work. The thing I was always curious about was how does it affect the patient? Because I think what we're doing at the end of the day to be better nurses, better physicians, is we want better patient outcomes at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I had never been able to see or experience that. And I love like developing guidebooks, putting new webinars together, enhancing an annual meeting. But I wanted to see how does that actually impact the patient? And so this is a unique opportunity. I have patients on my board. I have current care partners, past care partners, industry researchers. Everyone that's involved in this space is part of our board on purpose. So you really get an opportunity to see the well-roundedness of the work that you do and how you're kind of making a difference, which I think is a little bit of the juice you need to continue doing the work that we do.
Yeah, well, let's turn to Mission MSA and the things that you're doing. You say that you're devoted to research. I mean, it's all over the website. Tell us about the research.
Yeah, so we are the leading funder outside of NIH.
Oh, you're a funding organization.
We do fund. We provided almost $4 million of research funding. We do it in a couple different mechanisms. We provide what we call seed grant funding currently, which is a novel, interesting ideas that may have legs. We give them initial funding to test their hypothesis. And if it yields positive results, hopefully puts them in a place to apply for that next level of funding. We also do what we call collaborative grants, which are larger grants from our perspective with the same kind of intentionality around, let's take a big idea, demonstrate its concept, and then go for larger funding. We provide more initial upfront funding because these are multi-site collaborative agreements. So we've done that as well. So over the course of our, really since 2013, $4 million for an organization our size is significant. And that is as a reflection of the priorities that our patients and our care partners have to finding something that will be curative or symptom management. And so that's really where we're going with this funding.
So you're like the angel investor for research into MSA so that, like you said, if a piece of research has promise, then the larger organizations like the NIHs of the world will fund it. So where do you get the funding to fund this research?
We are largely funded by individual donations, bequests, and now industry support as well. But it is mostly individual donations.
Wow.
So folks that are giving incredibly generously who have been affected by this disease. They've seen what it does to a person, a family, a community, And so they're paying it forward. They're being incredibly generous with their resources. They want to see better outcomes. They want to end this disease. And so they're willing to provide incredible financial resources for us as an organization to help advance that work.
Joe, I bet some of these people making these donations have benefited from your patient support, which is a huge part of what you do. So what does that look like?
Yeah, we understand how incredibly important it is for patients who, especially newly diagnosed patients who are now getting this diagnosis and they leave the doctor's office and 99% of them have never heard of multiple system atrophy. They've been given this diagnosis, which they probably believed initially to be something else. And so they're leaving with their care partner with absolutely no idea what to do. How do I do this? There's an incredible amount of thought, perhaps anxiety, stress that is flooding a person and a family. And so what we aim to do is to be that hub so that people can come to us with their questions and we can kind of help direct them or provide direct resources. And we do this in a couple different ways. One, we have a patient support line. So patients and care partners can call. Their call will be answered by someone that's lived with the disease or has an expertise in the disease. Answer any questions they might have. This could range from where do I find a movement disorders doctor, someone who knows about the disease. It could go, what do I think about in the next 5 years? How do I get my home ready for what I know is next?
Wow.
Stress, mental health. How do I deal with what I'm experiencing? So our patient support line is a great resource for someone to have direct interaction, real-time discussion, and just quite frankly, have someone to talk to who knows what they're going through because it is a rare disease. It's not like a lot of people know of others that have been affected by MSA. And so it's important to immediately plug into someone that has gone through this experience and can help provide an initial person to talk to.
These people taking the calls, are they paid staff? Are they volunteers? Are they health professionals?
They're going to be a mix of staff and volunteers. We have an incredible roster of volunteers and continue to build that bench that are willing to talk. They've gone through this experience or they're currently going through it if they're an existing patient that are willing, are more than happy to engage with folks that have just gotten the diagnosis or need support. They will direct their calls depending on what they want to talk about to the appropriate person. So they make sure that they're getting what they need from the call. The other couple of things that we do are we have peer support groups. These peer support groups are throughout the country. Some of them meet in person. Some of them meet virtually. Some of them do both. And these are led by, again, people that have lived experience with multiple system atrophy. They can provide a sense of community. They can network with one another, share resources, lessons learned on a monthly basis, and just, again, start to find your village because there are going to be a lot of questions and things they, as they progress through their journey, they didn't know they needed to ask. And this is that group for them to rely on. And they're generally within a close proximity. And we know this has been rewarding because, again, that sense of loneliness is immense. And we want to make sure we're providing a mechanism so they can go find folks that are going through what they're going to find their community, to find their tribe. The other thing we do, we just launched this last year. It's a new online community called MSA Connect. And it's going to be very akin to LinkedIn. If someone asks you, like, what's this look like? It looks like LinkedIn. And so we wanted to provide a level of familiarity. But this is a group specifically for multiple system atrophy patients and care partners to go in, share resources electronically, have open discussions. We have subgroups for patients only, care partners only, so that they can really go in and feel a sense of safety. And we do have active Facebook groups, and we will continue to do so for the near future. The reason that we generated this new resource is we wanted it to be, one, you don't really know what's on Facebook.
Right.
We know these are real people with the disease, and also like the ability to share and express themselves in a safe environment. We don't collect any data. We don't sell any data. No third-party marketers are going to reach out to you, and it's private. We know in this environment, there's no regulation currently around some of these platforms about what they can and cannot share.
Right.
Especially around medical information, there's no current firewall to prevent your information from getting out. This platform will do that. And so that's why we felt it was so important for us to create something like that.
Hmm. Well, Joe, you're providing a whole lot of patient support, but you're also focused on the care that these patients receive with your new Centers of Excellence program. So tell us what a Center of Excellence is and what does that mean to have a program devoted to that?
So our Centers of Excellence, we just made the announcement like 3 weeks ago of 20 centers in the United States that provide excellent multidisciplinary care for multiple system atrophy patients. So what that ultimately comes down to is addressing a need of when you get diagnosed with disease, you don't know who to go to because it is such a rare disease. General neurologists are not generally well equipped or knowledgeable about the intricacies of the disease. But we also wanted to send them to centers where they're not going to have to go find additional support outside this hub. We want it to be a quote unquote one-stop shop. You find the care, you have your clinical support, but also your other healthcare providers, occupational, speech pathology, all these other healthcare providers that you need to help manage your disease. So it's important for us to send and make these available for our patients so they know where they might go to get the best care. I mean, that was a huge need that was given to us by our community. We don't know exactly where to go. So often we are told different things and then we have to drive and schedule all these appointments for speech or occupational or physical therapy, dietitian, all of that these centers provide so they can stay there and get all the care that they need.
Yeah. So the idea is that if I go to a center of excellence devoted to MSA, they already have the multidisciplinary team and they know that I'm going to need all these different services.
Right.
Ah.
And you know that they know
right
about MSA. So often our patients are educating their physicians about multiple system atrophy. We actually do provide some handouts to give to neurologists and folks that don't know about MSA, like, I have MSA, here are my symptoms, here are the things to know about the disease so that when they're coming in, they are speaking the same language, right? When you go to a Centers of Excellence, you're immediately speaking the same language, which is incredibly important.
Joe, there's another aspect to your work, and that is you do advocacy. What are some of your issues and what are you advocating for?
Yeah, there's a few different things that we're trying to support. One of the first ones is there's a bill that has passed the House called the National Plan to End Parkinson's Act. And this is being led by Michael J. Fox Foundation, other Parkinson groups, ourselves, and other atypical groups. So what this bill will do is actually purposely bring in internal and external stakeholders to figure out how are we going to address these diseases. We have something we can look at for ALS that the exact same thing a few years ago. And we're essentially mirroring that. It's a no-cost bill. We're pushing very hard so the Senate approves and passes before the end of the year, because that would be an incredible way for us to start moving this as a shared goal across multiple disease states to advance the understanding of what is this disease and how do we address it as private and public entities. We're also looking at SSDI. And Medicare access. So SSDI, Social Security Disability Insurance, and the ability for us to have access to Medicare. So once you're diagnosed with a disease of such as MSA, you have immediate access to SSDI. So that is some support.
So disability insurance payments from the government, right?
Right. But then our patients have to wait an additional 2 years if you're under 65 to then have access to Medicare. So if you're 58 and our patients traditionally are diagnosed younger than Parkinson's, then you have to wait 2 years to really have the ability to go and see all the healthcare providers and such that you need. Well, 2 years in the disease progression for MSA can drastically change a person's where they are from their symptoms. They could be walking to in a wheelchair in 2 years, which completely changes their ability to work, their care partner's ability to work. It flips their world, in essence, upside down in a very short amount of time. So we need to examine our MSA patients' community ability to have access to care right away, because that 2-year window, like I said, makes it very difficult for our patients that get the adequate care and support that they need from a disease that costs a tremendous amount of money.
Wow.
Healthcare is expensive, but imagine this kind of diagnosis. You know, we have patients from all socioeconomic backgrounds that it can be an absolute financial destruction for an entire family.
Yeah.
For a long time. So that's something that we're also taking a specific look at. And then research funding. We want to make sure that research funding is available for those that are doing work within neurodegenerative diseases such as MSA, because we need those dollars in the NIH to continue to support really important work.
Joe, before we go, March is Multiple System Atrophy Awareness Month. So this March 2024, what do you want the public to know about MSA?
I think this podcast is a great way. Thank you again for having us, because just me speaking the words, I am assuming people now at least know it a little bit, like what is MSA? So for us, let's just continue to make this disease into the public consciousness. The easy comparison is we are very similar to ALS in terms of our patient population size and our disease progression. What we're looking to do is to expand the knowledge base so that people know what this is. It makes it easier for us to advance the things that we care about from an advocacy perspective, gets dollars into research, and then also that people, just so you know what it is. So if you're experiencing symptoms, it's just one other thing that folks can be aware of when they're going to a neurologist, or if they've been diagnosed with Parkinson's, there's just something that feels off. Multiple system atrophy is something that they should be aware of. Like, we just want the disease to be known, because I think it would expedite diagnosis as well. So general public awareness is incredibly important for us.
And Joe, it sounds like early proper diagnosis is critical to this disease because it progresses so rapidly. So it's important to diagnose and start the treatment right away. So this 2-year waiting period to start to be able to afford treatment is really pretty awful.
Correct. Early diagnosis is incredibly important because you can really help prepare you and your family for what's next.
Well, Joe, I want to thank you for being on the podcast today. Thank you for everything that you are doing for the MSA patients and their families. I hope you'll come back sometime in the next year or so to tell us about the new things that you're doing, including the Centers of Excellence and all this new research that you're funding.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Joanna, for having me. This is a lot of fun, and I'm happy to come back if you'll have me.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends. Bye!